Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, beyond litigation purposes presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Please be seated. The heat is overflowing today, as you may have already noticed. We're going to try it with the windows open. If it becomes a distraction to council because of outside noise, just ask and we'll close it. In these older buildings, that's as sophisticated as we can get. All right, the first case for oral argument this morning is Brookside Townhouse Association versus Clarence. For the appellants, Clarence is Mr. David Claggett, attorney from Spearfish, and for the appellee, Brookside Townhouse Association is Mr. Thomas Brady from Spearfish. Mr. Claggett, you may proceed, sir.
Your Honors, Counsel, this case involves my clients, Oliver and Inez Clarence, who reside in the Brookside Townhouse Association, which is in Spearfish, South Dakota. Mr. Clarence has, since the litigation, been moved into a nursing home. He's 85 years old. Inez Clarence, 82. They've been married for about 62 years, a little over 62 years. In 1998, they purchased a residence in the Brookside Townhouse Association. The residence was built around 1988. When they purchased the residence directly across the street, also in the Brookside Townhouse Association, were other units. They're separate units from Ms. Clarence's units, but they're directly across the street. They contain the steel siding, exactly the same steel siding that the Clarence have installed on their property in this case. They contain exactly the same Pella windows that the Clarence have installed on this case. A little bit of background on the installation. Back in August 1st of 2000, a hailstorm came through Spearfish. It damaged some of the properties in the Townhouse Association. The Clarence house faces to the south. It damaged the north side of their properties. In her case, it damaged a couple of single pane windows that were back there and a patio door. Those have been replaced. The windows were replaced in February of 2001 with the Pella windows that she purchased. The association also collects insurance from every member of the association for the purpose of purchasing insurance for casualty. In this case, they have a fund set up. Money for the for insurance for hail, for instance, went into this fund, and the trustee or the association holds it as a trustee by specific language in its covenants. In this case, after the damage occurred to the house, it was up to the Clarence to repair the damage at their own cost. They did. They upgraded it to the Pella windows to avoid drafts. They paid the additional amount of money. The amount of money that was collected for them, from the association, from State Farm Insurance, $1,302.86, remains to this day in an account at the association. The association refuses to turn it over at this point. We allege that we complain that there is no cause for them to hold on to that money. The reason for upgrading, in this case, the windows and the siding was T111 siding originally, which is the type of siding that you put on utility buildings. In this case, in the Clarence property, when wind came through, when they had drafts, it came right through the windows, it came right through the siding. The Clarence would turn the temperature up to 72 degrees. Inside, it would be as cold as 58 degrees because it was so inadequate to protect them. Oliver Clarence has a medical condition, pretty severe medical condition. When he was residing in the property, of particular concern was his difficulty in circulation. He had, when he was young, injured a foot, had a foot crushed. His doctor insisted in this case that he be in a draft-free environment. The Clarence did not believe that they could provide a draft-free environment with this T111 type siding that they had there. So they obtained a quote in October of 2001 from a siding contractor to replace the siding with the wood siding with this steel siding. Again, matching the steel siding exactly with the steel siding across the street.
Wasn't the association at that time studying replacement wood siding for all the houses that needed it?
The association was studying replacing the wood siding with steel siding, yes, and had talked about it for years.
How about the same color?
Color wasn't even mentioned at that point. From what I understand, the houses across the street in the Townhouse Association had replaced their wood siding in about 1994. So here we are a number of years later, still waiting for a replacement to the steel siding. The problem with it is that T111 type siding has about a 10-year life. In this case, numerous pictures were introduced and evidence was produced showing that the siding had rotted. Matter of fact, State Farm Insurance had sent a letter to the association saying, we will not insure your property unless you correct the siding problem. That has been something that the association's board has been working with for quite a while. But in spite of the fact that the association had talked about siding for a change in the siding and improving it for quite a while, nothing was done. So in this case, particularly Inez Claren, who was concerned about her husband's health, took the step to obtain the Pella windows and to obtain the steel siding because nobody else was moving on it. Initially, she discussed the matter with a couple of her neighbors. There was an Annette Jenkins that also wanted to replace her siding with the steel siding, an immediate neighbor. Other members of the association were talking about it, but nobody was doing anything. When they approached Gary Reimnitz, who was the president of the board, with a question as to whether or not permission was required, his position was the board never required permission to change the siding. But if they were going to do it, he wanted the siding and the windows to be identical to the siding and the windows across the street, which is exactly what she did.
Now, if I understand this right, they're in a fourplex.
That's correct.
And the other four units in this fourplex have wood siding, they have steel, they have pewter windows, and she...
Well, yeah, there's a question as to whether the windows are pewter or faded brown or whatever, but
they're not white.
Right, not on that side of the street for the most part. We introduced a Defense Exhibit K, which shows a picture of the Clarence house, shows the other properties right next to it. We introduced another picture, Exhibit C, and I think M as well, or G, excuse me, that shows the property directly across the street. Now, there's less than 100 feet between the Clarence house and this house across the street. And it does show what the siding looks like right now. On the south side of this association goes on for about two blocks. There's 42 units, I think there is. On the south side, all the windows are white trim. The garage door, the trim around the house, everything's white. On that side. On the north side, there are varying degrees of this pewter or brown copper trim around the window. Okay. On, again, the north side of the north side, the back side of the houses, if you will, there is no attempt to coordinate the color of the windows, the trim around the windows. The houses back there have white trim, doesn't really make any difference. Okay. And they're not, and the association's not trying to enforce that. That's one of the concerns that we have regarding this insurance money, because the insurance money that we are requesting was solely for the windows on the north side of the association. It's got nothing to do with this litigation. That's why we are perplexed as to why that money's been held for more than 2 years and not turned over. There's no interest or anything, and the Clarence have repeatedly attempted to get it. They are the only people in this entire association that haven't received the proceeds, which is troubling at least. In this particular case, the issue really came down to whether or not the association could require some prior permission before siding or windows were changed. The Clarence I have come at the end of a number of other attorneys, including the association's prior law firm, which was Hood and Niece in Spearfish. Hood and Niece had taken the position that the association never required any permission before, that the units directly across the street had had the siding put on, the windows put on without permission, and the association had waived any plausible argument that they could require the prior permission. Now, this was the understanding of everybody in the association, including Gary Reimnitz, who was the president of the association. In direct examination from Mr. Brady in volume one of the transcript at page 76, Mr. Brady asked Mr. Reimnitz whether or not permission had been required, in essence, and I'm paraphrasing it, had been required for putting up the different siding or the windows in the past. His response is the board never knew that permission would be required until we consulted with you.
Now, your clients, however, did correspond and request permission, didn't they, at some point?
That's correct. What the deal was is that at the time, Attorney Niece had been involved in attempting to negotiate this thing. There was a request after Mr. Brady was hired about November 1st of 2001. At that time, there was a request that they put something in writing. Now, Inez had already specifically talked to Gary Reimnitz, the president, about this permission issue, as I discussed, in September, beginning of September 2001. And Reimnitz said, you can do whatever you want, but I'd like you to have it to match the place across the street. So she made the request to the board president. And the board president, the understanding of the members, including Inez, is that if you have a concern about the board, you bring it to the president. And the president will tell you what you have to do. And in this case, she did. The association's covenants require, if you make a request, it requires the board to respond in writing within 10 days. And the writing has to be signed by the president. There's a covenant provision that requires the signature of the president. There wasn't anything after Inez first went to Gary Reimnitz and requested this.
But there was a formal writing denying the request after their written request.
There was a letter that said it was from the board. Again, it wasn't signed, and that was one of the concerns that that Attorney Niece had prior to that, because...
Well, just a minute, though. You're not suggesting it wasn't from the board.
No. I think I need to clarify that. There weren't board minutes at the time saying that the matter had been brought up to the board, that there was a quorum of board members, that they voted on it, and who voted what way. That is also a requirement in the covenants as well.
I don't recall reading in your brief a challenge on those covenants.
No, and frankly, it is just in the covenants, and I'm pointing it out to the court. It was a matter that Inez Claren brought up several times, not simply at trial, that there was never anything, quote, in writing from the board, but also Lester Niece had brought it up in his correspondence of February 13, 2002, to Mr. Brady. That's attached to Inez Claren's affidavit of May 2nd, 2003, as one of the attachments to it, which fairly well lays out the proceedings prior to litigation beginning. In this case, and I know we've set out what the facts of the case are, but in this situation, again, on the stand, Gary Reimnitz stated under oath what the understanding had been all along, that there wasn't any necessity for any kind of permission to change the siding or change the windows. It was only when a new attorney was brought in by some members of the board. Now, that is also of a concern in this case. We had an offer of proof involving testimony from Troy Milligan, who was a board member at the time. And his concern is, when it came to matters after the attorneys were changed, when it came to matters involving the clearance, the problem was is that all of a sudden he was excluded as a board member. They'd have meetings, he wouldn't be invited. There weren't minutes prepared, no proper notice for those. And when he tried to prepare and submit minutes, they refused to receive those. And those are part of the exhibits in that offer of judgment, or offer of proof. So there is a concern. The board in this case was obviously operating with its own agenda. And its own agenda really came about only after November 1st of 2001, when there was a change in their, probably a disagreement with their existing attorneys, and they changed law firms.
But now you've tried all this, you've urged it, you've offered evidence of it.
Right.
And the trial court disagreed. Where'd the trial court err?
As far as I'm concerned in this case, one of the major errors the trial court made was that if it was going to grant an injunction, which it did in this case, it did not properly balance the equities. Now, what we have in here is the declarants have indicated a couple of things.
Saying he abused his discretion?
That's correct.
In what respect?
The declarants offered evidence of the financial hardship that taking the siding off the property would cause them. Among the evidence that they offered is Oliver Clarence's $3,000 a month nursing home bill. The Clarence live obviously on retirement. She's got a retirement about $2,000. He's got some retirement. I'm not sure exactly how much that is.
Is there anything in the restrictive covenants that require the trial court judge to balance the equities?
The restrictive covenants themselves don't, no. Basically, we're dealing with case law regarding balancing the equities if you're going to grant a mandatory injunction. And I think it's pretty clear that the court would look at, would be required to look at what the equities are. In this case, I don't think there's a shred of evidence to show that the association is hurt in any way, shape, or form by this siding being placed on the property.
Did you have an expert's opinion in the in evidence that that wood siding would not properly replace the wood siding that was on there, and that it had to be the steel siding or permanent siding?
Not to that effect. The question was is whether or not that T111 siding was first available at the time that it had to be placed on the property for Oliver Clarence's health and his health requirements under 2013-24. And at that point, Inez Clarence testified that if it wasn't the same siding, she couldn't get the same siding at that point. But if she ordered siding, it wouldn't be the original first siding. It would be somewhat similar to the siding that's on there. And she had to purchase it in sheets of 53. Probably takes 8 sheets to cover this property. But if, in fact, it was available, that's what she was told, that you would have to, if we can get it in sheets of 53.
Did you have an expert opinion that the drafts in the house was so bad that only steel siding would take care of the problem?
No, no.
Your client has a little bit of a credibility problem, I think, at this stage, at least with the trial court judge, right?
I don't really know that it's a credibility problem. I think the judge's determination is it was the board within its rights to do what it was claimed to do in this case, and that is sue for a mandatory injunction. And as far as credibility goes, I think he disregarded a lot of Gary Reimnitz's testimony about whether or not permission was required or not. The court simply took the position that he thought it was reasonable to require a different type of siding to be placed on it rather than the steel siding.
What is the association's position for not enforcing their restrictive covenants against the buildings across the street?
Never been anything, with the exception of, again, the board's understanding, everybody's understanding was up until this time, the time this litigation was in the works, up until November 1st, 2001, the position everybody had was that you don't need permission. And in this case, that's precisely what the problem was. Now, the windows, the Pella windows, don't really seem to be a huge issue in this case. What the board wants is the front part of the front street, the front entrance to the association. They want the window trim to be painted a different color, which would void the warranty, but that's what they want. So,
would it void the warranty as to substance, as to the performance of the windows, or simply as to the extent of durability of the paint?
No, it would be, the effectiveness of the window, because what you do is when you paint it, you trap air inside it, and you don't allow the water, any kind of water that gets in there, to drain on out, as I understand. But it would be simply a voiding of the warranty in that case. There's a big difference on the windows, too, because the windows were ordered, I believe, October 11, 2001, and they were received October 31st, which is the day before new council was involved. And they're already in there, they'd already paid for it, they couldn't be returned, had to be installed. And the, and really, the thing that I...
Get them in pewter?
No, couldn't, no. That was not allowed, that was not available. The white trim, or there was another trim, but the white trim exactly matched the trim right across the street.
You're saying Pella no longer makes pewter windows?
Not at that time. According to Ms. Claren, according to Merle Mullen, who was the siding contractor or salesman that came and testified, that wasn't available at the time. It was white. Okay. One of the problems that we have, and I see I'm just about out of time, I don't know if I can finish a thought in 20 seconds, but the problems that we do have in this case is that we believe it was simply not reasonable for the court to impose this mandatory injunction, and obviously to deny the jury trial as well, because we think what the Clarence did for Mr. Clarence's health and safety was absolutely necessary. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Clarence. Mr. Brady, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Chief Justice, Justices, I thank you, Counsel. I would like to thank you on behalf of the Brookside Association for the technology and having these proceedings live so that the board can hear together with numerous members of the association in Spearfish. They greatly appreciate that opportunity to listen to these proceedings in an issue that's extremely important to their community. And I think it's appropriate to fairly describe their community. There are 11 structures along Washington Street, six of them on the south side of the street, five of them on the north side of the street. The six on the south side of the street, the one on the immediate west end, is a two-story structure that does have steel siding that was replaced after initial construction. The other five units on the south side of the street, two of them are threeplexes and the others are four, are all ranch-style single-story structures with the fir siding. It is true, as Mr. Claggett represented, on that side of the street, on the south side of the street, there are white windows and white gutters. On the north side of the street is five structures. All of them are single-story structures, ranch-style construction of four residential units in each. On the north side of the street, all the rain gutters are brown, all the windows are brown, and so that is the structure of the community. There had been some changes made from its initial commencement, and there were issues going on in this community and concern to preserve the integrity of what they had. And the end of 2000, the beginning of 2001, they formed a committee to review their bylaws and review their covenants. And they wanted to, I guess, check back, see what to do. And in February of 2001, the association adopted restated covenants and restated bylaws, of which on that committee, one of the members was Inez Clark. And it was then the association was implementing their new bylaws, their new covenants, substantially similar to the old, very similar, but still some minor changes, and to enforce them. In the summer of 2001, issues were arising. There was some discussion on the long-term plan for the community as to siting, things of that nature, but everything except the one building, the 10 single-story ranch-style buildings, all had the brown fir vertical siding. And there was getting to the hailstorm, that was in 2000, they didn't even process a claim until 2001, and the money wasn't received till the end of 2001 or beginning of 2002. And So when this circumstance was evolving and questions were being raised, the Brookside Association asked me as their attorney about October 31 or November 1 of 2001 how they enforced their covenants. They were advised by a letter to the Brookside Association, which is Exhibit 6, as to their powers, their duties, their responsibilities, and how they are to implement their covenants. On November 3, Exhibit 7, the Clarins request permission to install white windows and steel siding. Now, they take exception that the board's letter of November 6 was not signed. They do not deny receipt of the letter from the board. The minutes of the board reflect that a meeting was held November 5 and considered the Clarin request. What the Clarins fail to advise is that the covenants require a proponent of a change to also appear at the meeting, which they did not do. And so the board considered the Clarins' written letter. They did not appear at the meeting, and they declined the request for white windows on the north side of the street, since all the windows on that side were brown. And they declined the request for steel siding because all the structures on that side and five of the six structures on the south side had the vertical fir siding. And they were notified of that November 6, 2001. Unbeknownst to the association, Clarins went ahead and entered into a contract with Merle Moen and Colin Siding December 24 of 2001, nearly 2 months after they were told they couldn't do this. And on July 30, 2002, the steel siding shows up on the driveway of the Clarins' home. Now, in between November and of 2001 and July of 2002, the record is replete of letters to the Clarins, to the Clarins' attorneys. The first was Lester Neese. The second was Brad Schreiber. The third was Deitch Cook, and finally Mr. Claggett was trial counsel. Please change the windows, paint the windows. Gave them the opportunity to paint the windows. There's no evidence in this record that painting those windows somehow causes moisture to be trapped. It's not there. But if in fact that's a problem for them, then change them out to brown. But the less expensive option is to paint the trim of the windows a matching brown color, and the board will accept that. Been willing to try to work through with them. And even on March 19 of 2002, Exhibit 22, the board said, you know, if you really disagree with our interpretation of our covenants, let's have a declaratory judgment and it'd be a stipulated case. Let's get this resolved. Let's avoid this conflict. Let's get this resolved. No, on July 30, the siding shows up. Before one piece was installed, Clarins' attorney, Mr. Schreiber, was advised of this event and notice given that please do not install this. If your clients do proceed, the board will take action which may result in requiring the Clarins to remove the siding that they installed. In spite of that notice to the Clarins, on July 31, construction started. Immediately, another notice was issued. Stop. And the suit was commenced at 1:30 that afternoon, seeking the relief the trial court has granted. They did stop for a while, and then a month later they went ahead and finished the project as the litigation proceeded. In any event, as been noted by this court, and is quite important, is that it's not for this court to retry the facts or retry the case, or even if this court were inclined to make a decision different than the trial court, it must defer to the trial court's findings of fact And is there evidence in this record to support what the trial court, Judge Johns, did? Absolutely and unconditionally in every aspect. Mr. Claggett asserts the health issues of Mr. Claren. The court recognized he has health issues. The court also noted that white windows versus brown windows have absolutely nothing to do or any effect on a health issue that they complain of. As to the draft, I would direct your attention to the testimony of then-President Charles McLean, pages 180 to 184 in the transcript. The association had gone out by the time of trial and had replaced any place there was damage to the first siding. It was replaced with like material. It was stained. All those issues that were noted by State Farm or to which they make reference that there was a problem with have all been resolved. The material is readily available. As an example, one of the members out there had permission to extend their unit into their deck. Ms. Helmer, she acquired the same material, acquired the same stain, and conformed her construction to match the rest of the properties like everybody was expected to do and as the board had asked all to do. And so as far as the siding causing any health problems to Mr. Claren, there's no evidence in this record. There's no expert opinion to that regard. There's nothing in there that would cause the court to conclude anything other than it did. The evidence is to the contrary. One, Mr. Milligan, the contractor that had worked and a board member, had worked for the Clarence, said he couldn't prove that any draft within the home was coming from the siding. Secondly, what's so critically important is that each homeowner has the personal responsibility to maintain their own property, to provide necessary maintenance and repair. So if, in fact, this siding had deteriorated on the Claren home to a degree or level that actually resulted in some type of draft coming into the home, it was as a result of their failure to fulfill their responsibilities to maintain and repair their own home. And there's no evidence that had this, if there was any problem with the siding, had it been repaired, had it been maintained, had it been caulked, had it been sealed, had it been stained, that it would work any different than any other type of siding. But now what you have is a sore thumb. As neighbor Debbie Hayes-Lauser testified to, and as the court noted in the closing remarks of the transcript, as evidenced by Exhibit F, you have in the middle of a four unit white horizontal shiplap siding with white windows and white rain gutters for a stretch of probably 20, 24 feet. And to the left of it, you have the remaining two units, and to the right, the Lauser unit, of the fir brown vertical siding, brown rain gutters, brown windows. So what the Clarence did in defiance of their board was proceeded to do what they want in defiance of the community rules and regulations that the Clarence were subject to at the time they bought, and even Inez Claren was a member of the committee in drafting the restated and revised covenants. And so it is an unfortunate circumstance. But is the remedy the court granted erroneous, clearly erroneous, or wrong? Absolutely and unconditionally not. There is expert testimony. Mr. Marlon Constant, his deposition, trial deposition was submitted in Exhibits 1 and 2. To that transcript. As a licensed and professional real estate appraiser, he testified in regard to the community reasons for covenants and the enforcement of those covenants, and to the effect that even trivial changes can, over time, affect the community's value. And so when a person not only has the responsibilities of a community that they join, but they also have the protections. And there's 42 residences out there. And Clarence have cast off on an independent action in defiance of the board elected by the residents and of the board fulfilling their duties in regard to the bylaws and the covenants. And so the Clarence had ample opportunity, one, not to violate the covenants, two, seek declaratory relief to see if, in fact, the reasonable interpretation of the board, as the court ultimately concluded, was correct or not. But no, they chose to do this. Now we have, 37 other residential units. Are they going to be compelled to then change to what the Clarence did? Is the decision being taken away from them? It should not be. That is what the community decided to do. That's what their board decided. And it's a governmental entity of their own, as they created. It's a contractual relationship. It's a burden on the realty and a benefit to the realty. And so we are asking this court to affirm the decision made by the Honorable Timothy R. Johns.
Did he balance the equities that was raised by the appellant?
Yes, he did. And first of all, I would submit in this circumstance, the court would not be required to do so, as I believe the court made note of in the findings or conclusions. But even if the court were required to balance the equities, it did so. In the sense of, first of all, you have Marlon Constant's testimony and affidavit, Exhibit 2. You have the neighbor's testimony of Debbie Hayes Lauser and John Lauser, immediate neighbor. You have the board president's testimony. And then you have the cost of their installation of the siding. Now, the suggestion that the Clarence could not afford to remove it or it'd be an economic burden on them, that information is not in this record, because if you would review Inez Clarence's testimony, when asked about some of her investments and assets and money that she had, she didn't know and couldn't tell us, and thus to claim impoverishment and yet not be able to advise of the economic resources that are there, she failed to meet her burden. And so I think the record is quite clear that if the court were required to balance the equities, a couple thousand dollars for the steel siding versus 37 other non-compliant now landowners, or the only ones that are compliant?
Well, but to answer the question, did Judge Johns, or did he not, actually balance the equities? I recall reading something in his decision saying he didn't need to because of the bad faith.
Well, and that's that is stated in his findings and conclusions, but then he goes on to state that even if he were to balance the equities in the relative hardship test, it's conclusion number 5. The court finds and concludes that the hardship to be suffered by Clarence from application of the covenants and issuance of a mandatory injunction is not disproportionate to the benefit to be gained by Brookside by enforcing the covenants with a mandatory injunction. So it's in the court's conclusion number 5. In conclusion number 4, the court stated that it did not believe it was required to balance the equities because of bad faith, that it had concluded the Clarence had acted. But even if it were to, it did so. And there's evidence in the record to support those conclusions by the court.
Let's talk about attorney's fees for just a minute. You're done with that thought?
Absolutely.
All right. You're only asking for attorney's fees of 142nd? 142nd?
That is the practical effect. I am retained as counsel for the association. The association's source of income is dues. The Clarins are a member of the association. They're one of 42. And so as they pay their dues, they, I guess, get the privilege of paying 1/42nd of my fees. They did propose to secede from the association or resign or whatever, but that was not accepted.
But the association itself doesn't have the right to seek attorney's fees, say, caused by a breach of the obligation of the restrictive covenants?
Not in their covenants.
Okay.
They're in the process of being amended to probably provide for that. So, no, Clarins are not obligated, pursuant to the covenants, to reimburse their neighbors for all the costs.
Are they delinquent on their fees? Are they delinquent on their dues, their annual dues?
I don't think so. Okay. I have no knowledge of that.
Real quickly, you only have a few seconds left. Tell me about non-enforcement against other non-compliant owners.
Well, two issues. One, there's no evidence that there has been non-enforcement in regard to siting issues and things of that nature. As to how the one fourplex unit was re-sited into with a steel siding is not part of this record. And so to suggest that that was a non-compliant issue, I would submit, I'm sure the board was well aware of it and authorized it or approved it. As to the suggestion of non-enforcement on the backside, I don't think there was some history on the off-street side, the backsides of these properties, that the board, prior boards, were less diligent in their enforcement. But when they did their restated covenants and things of that nature, there is no evidence after February of 2001 that they have been anything less than totally diligent on their enforcement. And it's probably because of a couple minor things that they looked at this and said, you know, we do have to keep control of this. Now, I would also submit that there were some changes on the backsides that were presented to the board, and the board did approve. So even if they weren't identical to the neighbors, the board did approve those actions.
Your time has expired, Council. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Claggett, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Chief Justice.
I want to address just a couple of things fairly quickly. On the bad faith issue that was just brought up, we have briefed it at page 14 of our briefs, of our initial brief. And it would seem like there would have to be a dishonest dishonest intent or an improper interest. And obviously in this case regarding the Clarins, the only interest was to make sure that Oliver was properly taken care of. That was a problem that the board was blind to. As a matter of fact, when Ms. Claren brought it to the attention of the board members, two of the board members, Judy Larson and Gary Reimnitz, they told her to get a lawnmower and move. I mean, their point was, you can leave if you don't like it. And frankly, I think that flies in the face of 2013-20. They were making the changes that they felt necessary for Oliver to survive properly in his own property at their own expense. And I think the intent of the legislature is to allow them to do that and to prohibit anybody from preventing that. That being said, the other issue that seemed to be addressed of importance is what detriment the association receives from the siding being placed down there. Mr. Constant's deposition was offered at the conclusion of the defendant's testimony. It was never reviewed by the court prior to his entering his decision from the bench, nor was it ever referred to in any of the findings or the conclusions. The problem with Mr. Constant's opinion is, as he acknowledged in his deposition, he never compared any sales figures out there. He never appraised any single piece of property in there. This was just his feeling that over a period of time, having that different siding there may change the cost, may change the price of the properties out there, with no facts to support that. As a matter of fact, the facts that were introduced directly contradict that. Gary Reimnitz, while this case was going on, the president and the person that really got things rolling in this case, place this house up for sale for $137,500 through Help You Sell, a self-help sales agency, sold it immediately. I mean, like that day, he had his full price. There were a couple other properties that were sold. Nobody lost a dime on the sale of their properties. The association has completely failed to show how it would be economically disadvantaged by having the siding up there. But as far as Inez Claren and her husband are concerned, she did testify, I believe, page 200 of the second trial transcript, as to her assets, and that this would be a financial economic hardship upon her. The cost of putting the siding up was about $3,800 plus change. The windows were about $4,900 on that. Again, she lives on retirement. What has happened since this action started is Oliver now requires nursing care for his various medical conditions.
What about the long-term effects of a ruling here? Because if you know, if they're allowed to do something nobody else has done, but steel horizontal siding on a building with vertical wood siding, you know, and if that's sustained, then what about the next person that comes along and they feel that they want to paint their house purple?
I believe at this point the board's position is going to be another revision of the bylaws and the covenants, more specific. One of the concerns that the Clarence had through the various prior attorneys that they talked to, including the attorneys that prepared the original covenants, Neeson Hood, was that those provisions that the board's relying upon to try to prohibit the placement of this different siding really involved structural changes, adding another building, changing your wall, not the outward cosmetic.
That's not what the covenant talks about, exterior in harmony and appearance.
That's right.
And so who gets to make the decision, the board or the individual homeowner?
It would depend upon how the covenants are construed, whether or not they're strictly construed against the board or against the homeowner. And my understanding is that they would be construed against the board, not the homeowner, in this particular case. And I'm sure that the board will cover it. One of the questions we've had is, what are they going to do as far as other siding? I don't know. They've talked about it, steel siding for a long time. Is it going to be vertical, horizontal? We don't have any plans. The board has not provided anything. One thing that did occur prior to this, prior to the entire litigation going on, I know there was a discussion about a deck action. There was discussions between Lester Neese, Jim Hood, and Mr. Brady about possibly mediating this, possibly taking another effort to try to get those resolved. The board rebuffed those, and frankly, in this case, Ms. Claren, upon the advice of her prior counsel, went forward. I don't see any bad faith whatsoever that could be derived from the fact that her concern for her husband of over 62 years is to make sure that he was warm. She had no confidence, really, that putting that T111 siding back on there would do the trick. And frankly, her testimony was pretty clear. It has succeeded. They don't have the drafts through there. He was comfortable. She doesn't have to get up at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, wrap his feet up in towels and heat and try to keep him going throughout the day. She doesn't have to bring him back to the doctor for those purposes. He's out of drafts. I mean, she testified she could stand by the wall and the wind would come through the siding, right through the siding, through the windows, through the siding. This was a house not in extreme disrepair because of her conduct or the conduct of anybody else, but it was in disrepair because this T111 really was never used, never supposed to be used for residential housing to begin with, and it was used up. It was over 10 years old. It was past its life expectancy. So, you know, checking everything out, she found this to be the most reasonable course, and I think the question is how reasonable it was in light of her objective. Her objective was merely to take care of her husband, not to antagonize anybody, not to cause dissension. I see I'm just about out of time. Thank you very much for your consideration in this case.
We'll be in recess approximately 10 minutes.